Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. I'm happy you've tuned in today, and I'm happy to welcome to the program today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine two guests, Martha Malicote, a voice that will be familiar to many of you who've listened to the show before, a good friend of the show, and Cynthia Kathir. And they are both here because we're going to be talking today about something a little bit unusual for this show, but I'm glad we're going to get to talk about it. The business of veterinary medicine. We recently had an episode about how to become a veterinarian at veterinary school, and we learned a little bit about that. And we're going to find out about the veterinary business today. And in particular, Cynthia is a veterinary student, an award-winning veterinary student. So I want to welcome both of you to the show. Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it.
It's great to be back, Dana. I love coming on the show, so it's good to return.
And Cynthia, thanks for being here for the first time.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Thank you for having me here.
Okay, so let's kind of get this important thing discussed right now, which is, Cynthia, tell us about the award that you won, because this is exciting, and this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so the Simmons Education Fund is a large, essentially scholarship trust fund sort of thing that they run a yearly competition for veterinary students. It's open to all third-year veterinary students, and it starts off with the first round where you complete an essay. The topic kind of changes year to year, but it's closely related to veterinary business in some manner. And then they end up choosing one winner from each school, and then during your fourth year, those winners go on to complete a more comprehensive business case study where they kind of present, for my case study, it was kind of a scenario of an associate veterinarian who was looking to purchase a practice, and they kind of provided a lot of different details and then asked us to analyze it and determine whether or not the specific practice she had in mind was a good investment or not.
And we're going to get into some of what that means, particularly things like associate and so forth when it comes to veterinary practices. But let's kind of be general here when we talk about the business of veterinary medicine at the top of the show and say that most people who consider the veterinarian will think about their neighborhood veterinarian, the veterinarian who's in private practice, right, who sees the dog or cat that the family has, and you form a relationship with this person, and you might see this person for years and years during the life of your animal and your pet. And that is kind of veterinary medicine from the sort of user perspective. We talked recently on this show about the many other types of veterinary medicine out there and applications ranging from the military to the government to many other institutions like zoos. But today, are we largely going to be talking about private practice?
I would say so. You know, certainly some of that business training has application elsewhere. But, you know, despite the breadth of opportunities that exist for veterinarians, still the vast majority of our graduates do go into private practice of some sort, whether it's the small animal, your image of the neighborhood veterinary practice, or if it's a large animal practice or working on, cattle or horses, what have you. It's still typically a private practice setting. And it's very unique when we look at medicine if you compare it to human medicine. And a lot of folks don't think about this initially. You know, in the human medical area, we have third-party payers. When you go to the doctor, you're for the most part responsible for your copay. And the same isn't true for veterinary practice. And so it's a very different environment when it comes to the cost of care. And also the business environment is a bit different as a result of that.
I think that warrants some explanation. What you're saying is that those of us here in the United States who have access to healthcare, we might go to our doctor's office, maybe a primary care doctor, and we have health insurance, so we pay a copay, but the bulk of the bill is paid by an insurance company, right? When we talk about veterinary medicine, though veterinary insurance is available, the vast majority of folks who come in with an animal are going to be paying this expense out of pocket in one shape or another.
Exactly. Although there is a small but growing area of veterinary insurance, for the most part, that's still devoted to kind of urgent care or emergency type care if you were to need a surgery or something like that. And general wellness care for our pets, for the most part, is not covered by any kind of insurance. And as you described, you know, the owner is responsible for that cost out of pocket.
Indeed. In fact, I had for my kitty veterinary insurance, and though it did cover exams, the annual exams and so forth, and tests and whatnot, what I recall is that I would pay for that out of pocket, and then I would be reimbursed minus the annual deductible. So even then, the veterinarian's office isn't having to deal with insurance companies like might exist at a practice that deals with human medicine.
Exactly. And I think there might be some human doctors out there that would be very excited to hear that they never had to deal with an insurance company again. But on the flip side, that means that every time our patients undergo some kind of care, the owners have to weigh the cost of that care and whether it's in their budget or not.
And this is one of the real sad things about veterinary medicine for probably veterinarians is that unlike human medicine, in which if a person comes in and has gotten severely ill or sick or whatnot, if you come into an emergency room, they're going to help you regardless of your ability to pay. Now, it may become a nightmare for you later on in terms of collections and whatnot. But the veterinary practice cannot be that way. And sadly, veterinarians have to talk to folks every day who maybe make a decision that is a financial decision. And that's just how it is. We all lament that that's how it is. And we've on this show talked before about compassion fatigue and so forth. But today, from the perspective of business, you know, that is a kind of a fact of doing business, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're responsible for ensuring that the care that we're providing is affordable to our clients, but also we're responsible for all of those things that we teach our students about in terms of running the business. You have employees, you have bills as a business, and so operating your business in the most effective way possible allows you to do that and to continue to keep the doors open. And those are all parts of the program that we've developed at the University of Florida to really prepare our students well for that aspect of being a business owner in addition to a veterinarian.
So let's hear about this program, if you don't mind. I'd love to know more, because I imagine as a veterinary student, Cynthia, you've spent many hours in clinics. You've probably spent many hours learning in the classroom about actually caring for animals, but doing the business part of it is important as well.
Yeah, the business aspect is very important, even if you're not owning a practice. I think it's really great for students because it really helps them appreciate what the owners are kind of going for when they're urging them to increase their efficiency and how to deal with clients and all of that. So the program that we have at UF, there are actually two or three classes that all students are required to take that kind of cover general concepts, everything from like contract negotiation to legal issues related to veterinary medicine. But then students also have the option of taking this elective business certificate. And this program includes a couple of classes that are primarily geared around practice ownership. They discuss different aspects of entrepreneurship, things of that nature. And then you also have to complete this clerkship where you spend a few weeks going to practices. And this was actually one of my favorite experiences of the certificate. We went to different practices, spent a week at each one where we kind of shadowed clients, saw the whole practice from their aspect. We shadowed every aspect of the clinic behind the scenes. And then afterwards, we sat down as a group and came up with areas that needed improvement, how to reduce client wait times to improve client satisfaction. We also looked through financials of the practice and looked at areas where they should make some changes, and then came up with a presentation, which we then presented to the clinic owners, as well as some of the other vets at the practice and practice managers, with ideas and suggestions for them to make changes and actually implement in their practice. And then the last kind of big component of the business certificate is we have a student club called the Veterinary Business Management Association, which they have chapters in most veterinary schools across the country, as well as a few across the ocean in Europe. And you have to attend, I think it's 11 or 12, like quite a few meetings, as well as a couple professional dinners and the annual business conference that the Veterinary Business Association hosts at UF. And that's really great because the VBMA does a wonderful job of bringing in a wide variety of speakers. They talk about practice ownership. They also talk about a bunch of different aspects of veterinary medicine. And it's really, really helpful even for students who aren't necessarily interested in owning a practice.
That is really outstanding stuff. I want to get into a lot of that, but right now we got to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking more with Cynthia Cathier as well as Martha Malicote. You're listening to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. I'm Dana Hill. Welcome back to Animal Airwave Live on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. Today's episode is one in which we won't be taking any calls, but I hope you're going to find this very interesting as we discuss the business of veterinary medicine. My guests today, Martha Malicote and Cynthia Kathir. And when we left off, Cynthia, you had just been describing the program at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine in which you can become a bit better versed in sort of the business of veterinary medicine. And you had talked about some of the time that you spent at a veterinary practice. And this is something that folks who are getting this certificate, I gather, will be doing. Tell us a little bit more for folks who are just tuning in, some of the stuff that you observe, particularly as it related to kind of seeing it from the perspective not only of the veterinarian, right, which one would expect that you would be seeing from that perspective as a future veterinarian yourself, but from the side of the human client as well.
So it was definitely very eye-opening to me to kind of follow clients through the clinic. When you're on the veterinary side of things, there's so much going on behind the scenes. You're kind of rushing around. Vets will be writing up paperwork, calling back clients that have called, writing up prescriptions, finishing up paperwork on the last client, reading up on what's coming in for the next room, like running down on things to do with the tech. And it's kind of just on and on and on. You're just running all day. And it's really easy to forget how much time people kind of sit and wait out in the waiting rooms between steps. So it was kind of nice because we pretty much sat with the client and timed every step of the way, how long they were in the waiting room before reception greeted them, before they went into the rooms, how long they waited to see a technician, exactly how much time they spent with the veterinarian, how long their animals were away from them, how long till checkout, you know, every step of the way. And it was just really interesting to see just how much of it added up. And it's so much longer when you're just sitting there doing nothing, which I've definitely experienced at my doctor's office, but I had never really kind of thought about it in a veterinary sense. And it really made me help appreciate how the client feels.
People listening to the show who have pets, who have spent time in veterinarian's office, that will seem very familiar to them. And you mentioned one aspect of it that in particular stands out to me, and that is the time that your pet is away from you, right? We all sort of know what it's like to go into the doctor's office, and first you wait in the waiting area, and then the nurse comes and gets you, and maybe you get your weight or your blood pressure, and then you wait in a room sort of alone until the doctor arrives. Okay, you know, that's all one thing. But with a pet, you're now waiting around and your pet's not there and you kind of don't know what's going on in the back room. You guys have seen what the back room is like. You all know. But those of us who have taken our pets in, we don't really know. So that time away is a kind of an anxious time probably for some clients.
Yeah, so that's definitely a very scary thing to have your pet taken away from you, especially if they're sick and you don't really know what's going on. And I think that's one of the other great parts of this business program is one of the big things they talk about is communication and really making sure the client understands what's going on at all times. But typically, we usually like to take animals back because they can tend to be a bit more stressed out and, you know, fearful or protective of their owners. And we usually have more equipment in the back, like more specialized equipment if we need to pull blood and do or pull urine or whatever it is that we need to do with your animal. And it tends to be a safer environment if we can do that away from the owner. But it's definitely something that's difficult for a lot of veterinarians. And I think it's just really, really important to communicate exactly what's going on to the client and kind of give them an accurate representation of how long they might be waiting for what services you're exactly performing with your animal when they're away from you.
This may vary from practice to practice, but did you get an estimate of the overall time that a person would spend at a veterinary clinic coming in for an appointment or even maybe for an emergency situation? That would probably vary a great deal.
It's tremendously variable, really, whether it's for an appointment, emergencies even more so, but even for appointments. And some of that depends on the type of practice it is. You know, if appointments are allotted with a long period of time that the client spends with the veterinarian, it may be actually, you know, a little bit more efficient because that veterinarian is strictly devoted to that client for that period of time versus a practice where perhaps there's higher volume and there's more clients coming in at one time and has to be balanced a little bit. But I think that very question of how long the client and the pet are in the clinic is something that the students get a very new appreciation for from the other side of it. Like Cynthia described, you know, you spend a lot of time as a veterinarian just trying to get through your to-do list and all the things that are circling around you, all of the clients that may be waiting or pets that might be in a room waiting for you tend to, you know, you lose track of all of that. And so seeing it from the other side, I find to be very powerful for these veterinary students to observe that experience.
It is in the best interest of any veterinarian in private practice to have a kind of satisfactory, I hate to use the word customer service experience, but in a way it is kind of like that, because you want this human client to continue to bring the pet in, to continue to be a patient, right? What kinds of feedback were you able to give, Cynthia, to the folks who ran the clinic where you were doing your research?
So there's a couple of different things. I mean, I think one of the biggest things, since wait times are so frustrating, finding ways to maximize efficiency, and that can be little things like the flow of how the animal progresses through the clinic. Like, for example, you typically want to get their weight usually when they come in. In some clinics, one of the ones I saw, the scale was on, you know, the other side of the treatment room, so they would have to bring the animal all the way to the back, weigh it, and then bring it back up to the treatment tables for the technicians to start doing some of the basic work with them. So, you know, just moving that. So it's as they're coming back to the treatment room, they go on the scale, and then they keep moving. It shaves off, you know, only a few seconds, but it really does start to add up throughout the day. So that's a big thing. Another big thing is honestly just making sure that reception is happy and like really enthusiastic about how they meet clients, because they are the face of the practice, and a lot of people tend to forget that. Veterinarians tend to get invested in the medicine and forget all about the customer service aspect, because it is definitely a very large customer service industry. Do you have any other inputs?
I would say that awareness of customer service is one of the biggest things we see, and it's in a variety of forms. But I think occasionally just a reminder about that, from the reception desk to how the phones are answered to everyone within the practice, it can be a good reminder. And so this program, this part of the certificate program where we're in the practices visiting, is really a win-win, because the students get to see those things and really observe that in action. And then the practice owners also get to learn, you know, and obviously being a very busy practice owner is something where you don't necessarily have the time to step back and see what's happening. And so bringing in a whole crew of students who are essentially doing a consultation for you can be really powerful. And we find it's a really good experience for everyone. And it's a great capstone for the veterinary business certificate students to take what they've learned in the classroom and then apply it in a real life setting.
I don't know if we're able to discuss this with any degree of specificity. Veterinary offices have been around for ages. Has much changed in the approach to dealing with the human beings who come in and over the years at veterinary clinics? That is to say, as a lot of industries begin to kind of recognize that customer service is a crucial component of what they're doing, even if they don't necessarily see themselves in a customer service industry. We all think of, you know, maybe retail or hospitality as being customer service industries. You don't think about veterinary medicine being that, because, of course, the most important part is the healing the sick pet, right? But of course, in an environment in which the human relationship is also critical, that is to say, as the animal owner, I need to be able to feel at ease. I need to feel like I'm being listened to. I need to feel like I am entrusting you with my pet and that you have the best interest of my pet in mind, right? So all of those kind of form the basis of a customer service experience, right? Have veterinarians always known this, or is this like a new focus?
I think that very savvy veterinarians have always known this, but it's not something that was really prevalent in our profession. If you want to look back, you know, 30 years ago, overwhelmingly veterinary practices were single doctor practices. They were small businesses, that solo doctor and a few staff that worked for them. And as what we can do as veterinarians has grown exponentially, the depth of care we can provide, the kind of care that we're able to provide, and the size of business that's required to support all of that equipment and diagnostics and the depth of care, with that, you've also seen a growth in the business aspect of practice. And your assessment is exactly correct in that the client's experience is equally important. And I would challenge you that it's probably hard for you to even evaluate if that veterinarian is doing a really good job. That's not something you're knowledgeable about, and that's why you take your pet to the vet. But you know if that veterinarian is providing you with a sort of a positive experience, conversation and communication being adequate and all of those things. And so each of those components is also important. It's not just enough anymore to be a good doctor. You have to be able to really be open and welcoming to your clients.
Well, what sort of challenges does that pose for the doctor, the veterinarian, right? Because you want to be thinking first and foremost about the care that you're providing for the animal. And that certainly should be your focus. You know, you're there to heal a sick animal. And while, of course, the human kind of side in the communication side is critically important, does it ever become frustrating as a veterinarian to feel like, oh, you know, I've got a lot of pressure right here in healing this sick animal or caring for this injured animal? It's hard enough to do that, and I don't want to walk on eggshells, feel like I'm walking on eggshells, you know, in the course of doing my work.
It certainly can be. Communication is so incredibly important, and it's something that veterinary schools in general, certainly UF but elsewhere, have recognized is so important to be training our students in. Because you're right, not only do you need to provide that care, but you also do need to be able to communicate with the client to an extent. And I kind of describe it often as pay me now or pay me later, because if you take the time up front to establish that relationship and communicate effectively, then from there you are much more able to be more efficient, get the things done you need to get done, and have the client be engaged in agreeing with you. Whereas if you don't give that client adequate attention up front and explain to them what's going to happen and what their expectations should be, then later when you do need a quick decision about something, they're maybe not prepared to provide that. And so it is really incredibly important. And as veterinary educators, we've become much more attuned to the fact that we have to train our students to be prepared for that part of practice as well.
Well, not to stray too far afield from the veterinary business side of it, but just to extend this a little bit more into the kind of customer service realm, what about the other staff at a veterinary clinic aside from the veterinarian, right? Because they're going to be the faces many times that the clients see when arriving. Certainly, they have to have the same approach in terms of friendliness and good communication, right? It can't just fall only on the veterinarian.
Absolutely. All the employees in the practice, it's really quite important. And that's, some people think that they're going to enter the veterinary field and because they want to deal with animals. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon how you look at it, our pets come with owners, and those people deserve our attention as well. So
let's talk a little bit about private practice as kind of a thing versus the myriad other approaches or kind of fields in which veterinarians can work. And I mentioned some of those towards the top of the show, and they're numerous, probably more than anyone could count. But a private practice is kind of a thing that we all are familiar with, and there's probably one in your neighborhood if you're listening to this show. So who goes into private practice? What kind of veterinary student finishes and decides to go into private practice, or maybe works in another area and then decides at some point in the future to go into private practice, especially at the kind of owner level?
So I am going to be going into private practice, and I hope to be an owner sometime soon. Part of the reason for me that I chose to do general practice is I do really love people. I love interacting with people, and that's such a big component of general practice because you have to have all these conversations with clients and be able to talk them through a lot of, you know, common topics in veterinary medicine. I also really like, so there's a ton of different specialties in veterinary medicine, and quite a few of my classmates are going on to do internships and residencies in hopes of specializing in one area. And what I found is that there was no one specific area of veterinary medicine that I love enough to do for the rest of my life. Right now, there's just a bunch of different topics that I like, a bunch of different areas. And in general practice, you get the chance to do a lot of these different areas of veterinary medicine because while there are clients that are going to be willing to be referred to maybe a more expensive specialty hospital to be treated by a boarded veterinary specialist, there's many clients that can't necessarily afford to do that. And then it kind of ends up falling on the general practitioner to provide some sort of solutions that's within their scope of practice to treat their animals. And so I kind of like the challenge of that.
And I would certainly echo that. I think a lot of students do enter general practice because of the breadth of opportunities that you get to have. I would also say, while I'm now a practicing veterinary specialist, I was in general practice. And one of the things I miss the most about that is the relationships that I was able to develop with clients. I saw their animals, for me, horses in equine practice, for years, several times a year. I got to know those clients and their animals very, very well. And the relationships that you get to build with the pet owners is, I think, for many people, also very rewarding.
Is that distinction between, say, large animal and small animal, something that a veterinarian going into private practice will need to decide what he or she wants to do? Because at some point, if you're going to be an equine specialist, right, you're kind of saying, this is the kind of medicine I'm going to do. And there might be veterinarians' offices, you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, that see as many horses as they do dogs or cats. But that might be a little bit less common in cities.
You're right about that. It is a bit less common in cities. And certainly our veterinary graduates graduate with a license that allows them to practice on any species. And there are mixed practices out there that see everything from, you know, a gerbil to a cow and everything in between. Where you will find general practitioners that limit their practice to a particular species or set of species, it's because they are most interested in those areas and perhaps want to have an opportunity to be the best, say, cat doctor that they can, instead of trying to have a breadth of focus where they, you know, need to feel quite effective with all the species. But there are certainly plenty of mixed practices left, typically in more rural areas. And I think most of those choices are made by veterinarians based on what they would prefer to practice on, and not necessarily limited by their training, because they are trained to practice on everything.
And the beauty of it also is that you're not 100% stuck to whatever you do. I know several veterinarians, such as Dr. Malico, who have kind of changed what they've done. I've heard of equine practitioners that have become small animal practitioners later in life, or go on to get boarded in a specialty. So it's really nice that we have a lot of variety in what we do and can change it up when we feel like we want to.
Let's talk a little bit about the financial, the sort of economic reasons one might choose to pursue a private practice, particularly ownership. This is probably not an insignificant reason for some people who choose to take this route.
That's definitely a big motivating factor. These days, the size of veterinary debt is just ever increasing. My own debt, I'm an out-of-state student, so I'm looking at over $200,000 in debt when I graduate with a pretty high interest rate. And while there are repayment plans and it would be manageable, I am really hoping to pay off these loans, you know, sooner than 25 years from now. So for me, practice ownership, while I love the business side of things and I was planning to do this anyways, knowing that I'll have more financial security and be able to pay off my loans a little bit faster, even though I will be taking on sizable loans to purchase a practice, is a bit of a comfort and a bit of a motivator for me to go down this route.
What are the average salaries of, say, an associate at a veterinary practice versus an owner at a veterinary practice? Let's assume a kind of average sort of practice.
Well, if we look at the data, so let's say a small animal practice, I think you would find that kind of looking at associate averages across all age groups of practitioners are going to be somewhere, you know, just shy of $100,000 a year typically. Obviously, those are averages, and that's exactly what that is. For practice owners, if we again look at the income average, it's a good deal more than that. But then also, as a business owner, you're building equity. You own something, and it's just like buying a house, and at the end of your mortgage that you've paid off on your house, you have something to show for it. You're building equity in a veterinary practice as you purchase it and buy in. And so that does allow, as Cynthia alluded to, some financial freedom to feel more confident about paying back loans in a faster rate. You know, the veterinary profession, not to sound dire, but is at a bit of a point where our debt to income ratio is not where it should be. Our veterinary students take on a similar amount of debt as medical students do, but obviously the salaries are significantly less. And so there are a lot of ways to attack that problem. And certainly the profession in general has been working on that from a lot of angles. But one of the ways that the University of Florida sees as a pathway forward to offer our students is to encourage them that practice ownership will allow them more financial freedom to repay that debt.
This might be a challenging thing to answer since you guys are coming from a college of veterinary medicine, but a college of veterinary medicine which has a clinic as well. But let's think about this. So it costs a lot to go to veterinary school, no doubt about it, right? And if the costs are similar to becoming, say, a human medical doctor, a physician, you know, many people who are concerned less about kind of many people who are not as in love with animals, let's say, might look at the numbers and say, well, you know, for about the same amount of money as in terms of education and a similar number of years, I could get a degree and become a physician. I'll choose that because I might stand to make, you know, X number of dollars per year. Many people who become veterinarians, I gather, we're probably going to be veterinarians from a small age, from a very young age. So this is something that you probably committed to even when you were a little girl, right, Cynthia? I mean, you probably knew you loved animals, and this was something you probably told people, when I grow up, I want to be a veterinarian.
Definitely in my case, that was exactly what happened. But I do have some classmates that kind of discovered their love for veterinary medicine a little bit later in life. Some as late as the end of college when they had to change up their major and retake a bunch of classes in order to get in. But it's definitely a passion that drives us to practice veterinary medicine. Contrary to popular belief, we are not in it for the money because there actually is not very much money in it.
Well, yeah, and that's and that's exactly it. So you're kind of up against two difficult but opposing forces. On one hand, you've got the high cost of the education, right? And I don't know where the University of Florida is positioned relative to other colleges of veterinary medicine. But on the other hand, you're also up against the kind of limit of what veterinarians can charge before humans begin to say, ah, I'm, you know, this is something that I'll just have to do without. Because as we discussed sort of early in the program, veterinary care is something that people can choose to not buy. So how, as an industry, do veterinarians kind of see the salaries that they would need in order to pay for the high cost of education but not price themselves out of business?
Well, you've basically summed up a challenge in our profession quite efficiently there. That was very good. you're right in that most veterinary students would go to veterinary school despite the cost and even at a higher cost, which I find difficult to fathom, but is true based on some research data, because they want to be veterinarians regardless of the cost. But you're absolutely right that for private practice, you do, you know, get up to a point where you can only afford so much for pets' care. And because our owners are responsible for the cost of care, it does require managing that carefully. And so there is a limitation there. The profession in general has taken on a few different approaches. One is, you know, where are the animals out there that aren't getting care at all? And how can we see those pets and have them get affordable care that they're not getting right now and potentially provide some additional work to be done in our you know, veterinary world? But in addition to that, practice ownership is another opportunity. You know, a well-run practice does yield a little bit of money back to the owner. As Cynthia alluded to, it's not like people are going out and buying, you know, Ferraris with their practice ownership money, but it does allow a little bit of the profit from that business to come back to the practice owner that the associate doesn't have access to. So that's why we see that, you know, the well-run small veterinary practice is a tremendous vehicle for veterinarians to be a little bit more financially secure.
So a practice owner will make in the six figures in terms of salary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I would say that a veterinarian, just an associate, should also be nearly there. There may be veterinarians listening to this that would laugh at me because they're not, but the averages would tell us that they should do that. But the practice owner should also be taking home a small portion of that practice's revenue as profit. And it's not substantial. It's not, you know, a limitless amount of money, but a small portion of that practice revenue should be profit for the owner as well.
But then how much of that has to be reinvested in the practice, not to mention the cost of the student loan repayments, let's say, if that's, I imagine that not too many people have the kind of walking around money to pay for veterinary college out of pocket.
Absolutely. I mean, and those are both things that that money needs to be spent on as well. Certainly a well-run business does include reinvesting money into equipment and upgrades and things like that. And that's part of the, you know, the training that I think a good business owner has is deciding where to spend those funds. But also if it does allow a faster debt repayment, that's great as well. And that's a way we see to go forward as a successful route for these veterinary students.
If we can pause for just a moment, I'd like to take a break. And when we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about. My guests today are Martha Malicote and Cynthia Kathir, and we're talking about kind of the business of veterinary medicine here on Animal Airwaves Live on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live on WUFT-FM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. And today, a discussion about the business of veterinary medicine. We're not going to be taking any calls today, but I hope you're finding this episode interesting. My guests are our friend Martha Malicote from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine and Cynthia Cuthier, who's here for the first time. And we are talking, as I said, about the business of veterinary medicine. And we left off. We had sort of been talking about private practice, and I wanted to just, before we switch gears, talk a little bit about the kind of overhead associated with a private practice, because it occurs to me that not only in private practice might one have to pay for not just the salaries, of course, of the veterinarians who work there, be they associate or owner, but also the staff of techs and so forth, the electricity, the building. I mean, all of these things kind of like go in together. And of course, one assumes that the bill that is given to the pet owner will be sufficient to pay for all of these things, you know, in the aggregate when it's all totaled up. It's probably not an insignificant cost, the overhead associated with running a private practice.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I would say on average, veterinary practices spend somewhere between 30 and 40% of their total revenue on staff. So that's a substantial amount. And then also on supplies and medications. And something that's very different about veterinary medicine from human medicine is, you know, you go to the pharmacy and get your prescription filled there, whereas we're often dispensing medications directly to the pet owner. And that is something that requires a good deal of organization to have all that stuff available when it's needed. And for the most part, that's why practices keep those medications, is that you can't go fill your prescription for a cat-specific medication at Publix or a horse-specific medication even less commonly, right? And so maintaining all of that can also be pretty costly. So, you know, with staff alone, it's somewhere between 30 to 40%, and then sort of the general overhead of rent and, you know, like you say, utilities and things like that can be somewhere on the order of 20 to 25%. You can see now we've already spent a lot of money and we haven't even paid for the medications or paid the owners. So, you know, running a veterinary business effectively and in a way that will allow the practice owner to make some extra money, it does require some attention and some training to do it right. Even a well-run veterinary practice probably yields somewhere on the order of 15 or maybe 20% of the total revenue as profit. And so it's a very narrow profit margin in comparison to some other industries.
So where does the industry stand in terms of those kinds of relationships, those abilities to kind of do business that way when there are corporations that are now in the field of veterinary medicine, right? It's like let's say that you're a, that you're operating a veterinary practice, and you've got all your various overhead, which you just discussed, Dr. Malicote, right? But then a large corporation in your same town has a veterinary practice, and the kind of economies of scale in terms of large corporations mean that they can probably afford to do some things that the private practice can't. Maybe they can have fancier equipment. Maybe they can have shinier facilities. Maybe they can afford to, for a while, have lower prices or fewer clients or something, and that might make it challenging for the other veterinarians' offices in the same vicinity, not to mention to what that does to potential people who want to be veterinarians and own practices and how they might fit into a corporate environment.
Absolutely. I mean, corporate practice is something that is a very interesting part of our profession. And, you know, by no means is that it's not necessarily a negative route. And I don't want to sound that way. Obviously, I'm sort of in the business of encouraging our veterinary students to buy veterinary practices. That's part of why I work so hard to help train them in that direction. But that's just one pathway that you can follow. And certainly for folks that are interested in being associate veterinarians and aren't interested in practice ownership, the corporate route can be a very good pathway for them to work for, as you say, a larger company that has some economies of scale in certain areas and allows them to do some additional things. We are finding that there are more and more corporate practices in veterinary medicine. There's this very specific type of business model that for the most part they seem to be getting into, and that's, you know, about the two or three doctor practice in a suburban area, which is why folks that live in the suburbs seem to feel like they see them everywhere. that's one segment of veterinary practice. Certainly, you know, mixed practice, rural practice, those areas don't necessarily have the same amount of corporate ownership that the average suburban small animal practice does. But they're both reasonable pathways for our profession. I do, you know, obviously I stand on the side of wanting to encourage our vet students to buy into practices and whatever format that might take, whether it's a smaller few doctor practice, or if it is buying into a multi-practice location, smaller corporation. Either way, I think it is good for them in the long run.
What kinds of regulations and laws might make owning a practice more or less challenging for somebody who is considering this option?
The main regulation that exists is that in some states and in varying amounts of sort of enforcement and specificity, veterinary practices can only be owned by veterinarians. And so that is something that is more and more going by the wayside, but has historically been a big limitation to corporate practice in certain states. And that's being worked around in some places and will probably continue to change. There are certainly people that have worked for a long time in veterinary medicine that may not be veterinarians. For example, practice managers that have had a significant management role in practices for a long time. And there's an argument that those kind of folks should also have the opportunity to be business owners. And that would also be excluded by regulations that prevent non-veterinarians from owning a veterinary practice. So there's some good and some bad there with that. But the legal ramifications of that discussion are becoming less of an issue across the country.
Are programs like the one that we've been talking about at the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, are they common at other veterinary colleges across the country?
Well, there is this type of stuff is available to some degree at every veterinary college, but I would say that the University of Florida program is certainly a signature program for us and unique in terms of the depth of the curriculum, as well as the certificate that's earned by the students that go that route are earning an academic credential certificate. It's administered by the University of Florida. And so they work very hard to earn that. And I find that they are more marketable in the job market as a result. We have practice owners and potential hiring folks that get in touch with us that want to seek out our students that have earned the business certificate because they really have learned a lot about the importance of all the other stuff, the things beyond practice of medicine that are so important for our veterinarians.
Are there some folks for whom private practice is not maybe the best idea? Maybe veterinarians who are interested in research, veterinarians who are really drawn to the kind of academic world?
Yeah, there's quite a few different areas of the field, and there is a chunk of my classmates that will be going on to do other things. And
there certainly is a place for all of that. You know, I would say if you look at our profession overall, probably 70 to 75% of veterinarians are in private practice in some form or fashion. But there is certainly a place for academic practice, for research, for specialists. As you've talked about on this show before, there are a lot of other routes that one can take with the training that you get as a veterinarian. But still, overwhelmingly, we do find that people end up in private practice for the most part.
Cynthia, as you think about your future as a practicing veterinarian and maybe one in private practice, particularly in an ownership capacity, are there any things that right now kind of give you a little bit of worry or fear about that? I mean, it's a big leap.
It's definitely a big leap. I would say prior to coming to veterinary school, I always thought that practice ownership would be something that I would kind of fall into much further down the line. Practices I'd worked in as a technician, the owners had worked there as associates for several years, and eventually owner retired and they kind of took over. And in my head, that was kind of what I thought would happen. But after going through the business program here at UF and seeing what the VBMA had to offer, I began to realize that it's really something that's doable, even at a young age. You know, I've met people who have done it even just a few years out from graduation. There's definitely lots of lenders that are willing to work with younger associates. It's certainly scary, and it's going to be quite a significant sum that I'll be borrowing to purchase a practice. But with the preparation that I've got from this program, I definitely feel more confident that I'll be able to tackle a lot of the major challenges that are going to be presented to me.
As we approach the end of the episode here today, and as folks who've listened to this show for years have maybe heard conversations about becoming a veterinarian, conversations that we've had before about the field of veterinary medicine in many different ways, what are some things that they should know about folks who choose private practice and maybe choose to focus on kind of following the goal that Cynthia sort of laid out of maybe becoming owners of practices? What are some things that folks who are maybe just pet owners should think about?
I think it's really important for owners to, or for pet owners to realize that as veterinarians, we really want what's best for your animal, and we want to provide it to you in a way that makes you feel comfortable, makes you understand what's going on, and that's financially feasible for you. And we really do want to try working with you to make that an option. And really focusing on communication is a great way to do that, and maximizing how your business works. If you can get better profits and keep prices low, that's wonderful for the client. And I think it's just really important for them to recognize that we're in this for you and your animals, and we really want you to have a great experience with us.
Dr. Malico, you've seen kind of both sides of it, right? You've been in academia, right? You do research, and you've been in private practice as well. You know, how do you feel about, you know, the kind of state of things? Do you feel that becoming a business owner will be something that more people who choose veterinarians, choose veterinary medicine will pursue? Or do you think that as we move forward in the future that other factors might make folks more likely to choose one veterinary path than another?
I mean, I have a lot of optimism about our profession and about the business market around our profession. And those two things go hand in hand. You know, to me, we are in a great time. You know, the veterinary market in general is growing. Pet ownership is growing. And there are tremendous opportunities for our graduates to have really fulfilling careers practicing medicine, but also being business owners. And, you know, what's different than 30 years ago is there is a little bit more on the line because our students have more significant cost of education and debt. But also there's tremendous opportunity that's out there. And I really am optimistic about what the future looks like for these veterinary graduates. And I'm looking forward to, you know, kind of watching them all take over as young practice owners and be really successful because the model is out there and it's, you know, can be very successful.
Well, thank you both for being here. Cynthia, good luck. Thank you for coming by. Congratulations on your award. Dr. Malico, thanks for coming back. I always enjoy talking to you.
Absolutely. We're happy to be here.
I want to say thank you to Sarah Carey and her staff over at the UF College of Veterinary Medicine for their help with this show. And to you, the listener, I'm Dana Hill. I hope you'll join me next time for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.